Hey everybody, it's Mark Pattison and I'm back with another awesome episode of Finding Your Summit. And this week I've got a longtime reporter from ESPN. Her name is Shelley Smith. Shelley was so incredible to have on the pod. We go through her career spanning way back. She worked for SI, then went on to ESPN. And in the things that she's had to overcome in terms of her cancer from melanoma and breast cancer. And then in 2017, she suffered a stroke inside the Warriors locker room. So, you know, she's been through it all and she's super resilient. She keeps coming back. She's a phenomenal reporter and just full of integrity and relationships. And she really understands longevity. So really awesome to get caught up with Shelley today on the pod. And as always, if you want to find out about my climb coming up in about 30 days now, headed down to Vincent Massif in Antarctica. You can find and follow me on my website, www.markpattisonnfl.com. And as always, this pod is brought to you by Velitzer Blue Skincare Line. .com, all natural stuff, products to go on your skin and make you feel great and beautiful as always. And remember, always go in and rate and review. You can do that through my website. It really does help. You know, we're trying out there trying to get momentum. It seems like every week I have these metrics that pop up and just more and more people are really identifying, I think, with this pod, what it's all about. Just like Shelley. So on that note, let's listen to the podcast. Here we go. Hey, everybody. It's Mark Pattison back again with another phenomenal episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And certainly this person fits the bill for everything about this show. Her name is Shelley Smith. Shelley, how you doing?
I'm great, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Hey, listen, this is an honor for me. You know, way back in the day, I used to talk to a lot of people like you. And that's the one thing that it's the pro and con of being a professional sports athlete. You know, with guys like myself, ultimately, we all go off the cliff. And with you, you've now been at ESPN for many years, since 1997. And you get to continue to, you know, you're very talented, but you get to continue your work and report on all the things that we love to cheer about.
Well, and you know, what's interesting is that 20 years ago, we wouldn't be having this conversation because it was out with the old and with the new. And I think there is a great respect now at ESPN for people with experience. And rather than just say I'm old, I'm 60, I'm just going to say I'm experienced and I value my experience. And I feel like they do as well, and which is why I just signed a new three-year contract.
Well, you know, look, lucky you, because there have been so many, and you know the names that have been let go, and they're talented as well. But you know, I think you bring a different element. You know, you've always been somebody with a lot of fantastic insights. You bring a compassionate side and to the table, and you have access to a lot of these different athletes who've been competing for so many years, and so. Again, I think it gets back to that little word called experience, in that, you know, relationships don't happen just overnight.
No, and it's funny. My dad talks about it all the time. He's the one who says I network better than anyone he's ever seen. I remain friends with people I work with or have worked with. I can think of a guy who was a security agent for the FBI who was guarding Mary Pierce 25 years ago, and I went with them to the U.S. Open because her dad was threatening her. You probably don't even know that name. You're so young. But he did, and I'm still friends with him today. I mean, friendly. We're not, you know, I don't see him every week or anything like that, but we talk, and I can call him, and he would do about anything for me. And there's a lot of people in this world like that who like to keep up relationships, and it definitely helps down the road when you're looking for a source on something, and I'm constantly looking for story ideas. Anybody listening, if you have any, call me. So I think it does make a difference for you to keep your sources and to keep on good standards and good grounds with your sources. You don't burn them. They don't burn you. You treat them with respect. They treat you with respect. And that's sort of the way the world has worked for me.
Yeah, well, that's just a great healthy attitude, you know, not using people, but really having a genuine interest in what they're doing. I want to bring up two names that come to mind. One guy is actually somebody I had on my podcast a number of months ago, and he is Jake Olson. And for those those people that don't know Jake, Jake's a guy who for the last 4 years has played football at USC, and that alone is you know hard enough. But you know, you throw into the mix that he lost his eyesight many years ago, and he's blind, and he's a long snapper, and he's actually played in D1 games for USC is remarkable. And Shelley, I want to tell you that I went back and in my research with you, I found a couple videos that you had done with him, and this is back when he might have even had his eyesight or his near kind of that period of time when he had to have the surgery because he had cancer in his eyeballs, and he was with Pete Carroll. And, you know, you've nurtured that relationship. And it was just, I mean, literally my eyes watered when I watched.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing story. We met him 10 years ago when he was 12. And he was he had 1 month of sight left. And I was driving to the Notre Dame USC game and was called by my boss and told about this story. And I had to pull over because it was so striking to me and so shocking that this poor kid had 1 month of sight left. Can you imagine that? And so I pulled over and sat there and cried and tried to figure out what's my next move. And we didn't know what the family wanted to do or anything. And so I showed up at the midfield at the USC Watcher, and there was his family with Jake Olson, little high boy, you know, little skinny kid. And Pete Carroll demanded that I do the live to tape with him and Jake. And I'm like, okay, well, I didn't want to introduce him as a kid with 1 month of sight left because I didn't want to give up our story, but I wanted him in that because Pete was making me. And so I just introduced him as Pete's special friend. And then we just took off from there. And so I spent the next month with him and his family. And I remember the day that he had his remaining eye removed. And it was a really tough day. That's when you realize that when what you do for work crosses over into your personal life. And I spent the day crying and feeling badly. And then the kid comes back to USC 6 days later with his blind stick and is as upbeat as anybody you could ever imagine. And we just kept up that relationship. And Nancy Devaney was the producer on it. And she was, she spearheaded the whole thing. She kept up on him, what he was doing. He tried out for his high school football team. He made it as a long snapper. And then he always wanted to go to USC. So he goes to SC and Steve Sarkisian asked him to be the long snapper on that. And we just took off from there. And so then I got cancer May 2014, I was diagnosed. So it's almost been 5 years, which is a magical number in the cancer world. But, and we did a story together, the two of us, and he had obviously had lost his sight. He was a student at USC. And I said, what do you remember about my hair? He goes, real long, full. And I was bald at that point. And I said, give me your hand. I took his hand and I rubbed it on my head and he just started laughing. It was probably my favorite moment of all these stories we did on him. And we were fortunate enough to win the long form Emmy in the spring. And I said to him, I'm really kind of sick of the kid. You know, I had just have done so many things. And I was kidding, of course. He's a wonderful young man. And we're going on a little bit of a speaking tour this next spring. So that'll be fun. He's just a remarkable young man. And I'm very lucky and fortunate to be a part of his life.
Well, you know, it's interesting because it really seems in this case that the roles got reversed. And I did see that piece when he rubbed your head. And you know,
yes.
and you know, he's just the power of positivity and there isn't really anything that he can't do. And he sees himself that way. And the thing that it was remarkable for me, because I drove down to USC and did this interview with him at Heritage Hall. And I told him this. I go, you know, you look like a football player. I mean, let's just take the whole blind thing aside.
Oh,
but you know,
he put on 50 pounds.
Yeah.
But
it really is. You never know when these things happen, but you were gracious to him, you know, way back in the day when he was just a small kid and just got flipped.
Just so you know, I told him, we just did a presentation at USC. I said, Jake, if you ever get arrested, you're going down. I will take you out. I will report it. And I will not even think about the fact that we're friends because that's just the way it has to be in this kind of relationship. But I said, I don't expect him to get arrested or do anything like that. But It is a fine line that you have to be careful of. And if I've ever crossed it, it's been with Jake or with Keyshawn Johnson, who is also a really good friend. So hopefully neither one of them come to the point where I have to report bad things on them.
No, they're good people though. So, and I do want to come back to a couple other names, but you know, as you're talking, I want to ask you a question, and I'm sorry if I'm going to bounce around just a little bit, but
So how
do you, like, I really respect you and your reporting. Okay. So let me just state that.
Thank you.
And yeah. And I'm not a reporter. I'm just here having a chit chat with you, but how do you come up with that unique angle when the world of competitiveness amongst journalists is out there? And rather than just state the obvious, you're coming up with something with a hook or a twist that somebody else, where does that come from in your world?
I think it's just my natural curiosity. I'd like to think I work harder than everyone else, but I'm sure I don't. But I am naturally curious. I want to find out why. And our talent meetings just got canceled for the first week in December. And it's killing me that I don't know why. Nobody knows why. So I think that's what has driven me in my quest to be a really good reporter, is to find out the reason behind things and find out why. And so it wasn't enough just to know Keyshawn Johnson as a high school senior. I had to know his background. And once I found out about his background, then we wrote a book and we became friends. And with Jake, it was even more personal because of my own cancer, but it became, I want to know what it's like. And when you had to go through chemo and suddenly you're going in the hospital and it's your last moments of sight, what are you thinking? I just have this, you know, very strange sense of curiosity that I just am not satisfied until I know. And so I'm always searching and trying to find something that nobody else knows. And that's still the best part of my job, is the little nuggets that I can come up with, even just going to Warriors practice or Warriors game. They lost the first game of the Western Conference final a couple of years ago. And Steph Curry was sitting at his locker reading. And I thought, well, Steph's very spiritual and faith guided. And I thought, well, maybe he was reading a book to inspire him. No, he was reading his fan mail. And I said, why are you reading your fan mail? Because it makes me feel good. And so it was things like that, that I can kind of get on the fly because I've been around so long. Nobody questions my motives or the reason why I do things is because I just want good information. And I would never report if he said, don't tell anybody that. I would never burn somebody like that. So I have a lot of respect in this business, and I just love finding out things that nobody else knows. And that's just what has driven me probably my entire career.
Yeah. Well, it's the, like you said, it's the power of curiosity. And then I think on top of that, you have to be a good listener, and you're probably very good at both those things, which has driven your success. I want to ask you about the Emmy, and this ties into all the things you just said for a piece you did on Magic Johnson. Magic to me has been a fascinating guy. You know, I grew up in Seattle Sonic. And so, you know, at the time and that day, you know, it was the Lakers versus the Sonics, downtown Freddie Brown and everybody else. And then it evolved into some different teams. Ultimately, they left. But where did that relationship for you form with Magic?
Well, he was not extremely welcoming when I did the story after he was diagnosed with HIV. And he was coaching, and he was absolutely not wanting to do this. And I tried everything I knew how. I showed up at practice. I went to the big group gatherings of the media, and I would ask questions. And he was so annoyed that I was trying to do this story. He didn't want to talk about it. He didn't want to do it. But you don't ever let the subject dictate what you do. The person.
Yeah.
You don't need him to do a story. And I did this whole story on his HIV positive tests and what he was going through without doing an interview with him. And we won an Emmy for that show. And I've forgotten about all this, but he and I now are very good friends. And to the extent that we will stop and say hi, and he'll come up, or if I'm at dinner someplace and vice versa. So, I mean, not friends, but we're friendly. But it was a rough period because he didn't want to do the story. But I've always said, you don't have to have the main interview. You just get people around him. So we had all the people around him, his friends, his colleagues, everybody talking about him and how he was dealing with it. And we just did it. And so he never held it against me. And we have a really nice professional working relationship right now.
Yeah. Do you think that
so
was,
I guess that's that answer.
Yeah, no, huh? It does. And you know, do you think it was more of a case of sensitivity or maturity that led to him, you know, being standoffish? Because, you know, I mean, there wasn't a bigger story in the world. And I remember when that story hit, I mean, it was as big a story in the world as I've ever been.
Yeah. I think he just wanted it to go away. And I think there was probably some sort of denial in there. And I don't want to be amateur psychologist, although I do that all the time. Yeah. But I just think he wanted it to go away. He didn't want to talk about it. Wanted to be a normal person, a normal coach, you know, with a normal team. And I was assigned to do this story, and I was going to do it one way or the other. And we did a good job with it. I think I haven't thought about this in so long, but I think we obviously did it the right way because he didn't hold a grudge against me as some people have. And he accepts me now. So obviously I did something right, but it was a matter of, I just don't think he wanted to talk about it. And I really think that was it. He wanted it just to disappear.
Yeah. You know, I just got done, I think last week, seeing Bohemian Rhapsody, and a great movie, you know, with Queen and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I forgot all about it and a lot of the songs and everything else, but again, you know, different, but the same in terms of iconic figures in defining mm-hmm. moments that really had an impact on our culture and what was going on at that time. And I mean, I think it would have been, irresponsible for you, she's a sports journalist working at ESPN, to neglect that story and not tell it. I mean, it had to be told. And part of that was the healing too, of like, how do people mm-hmm. get out of this thing?
Yeah, it was definitely a difficult story to do, and wasn't one that I asked for or wanted, but I was there the day of the press conference. And I remember being so struck. I knew ahead of time what was going on because I was at Sports Illustrated as well as ESPN. And so we had a good source who was writing a book with Magic, Roy Johnson, who called me and said, Magic has AIDS. You know, it was how, and, you know, ignorant we were. It wasn't AIDS, it was HIV, you know, but we know that now. And then we had to go through the whole All-Star game where he played in the All-Star game, and then he wanted to play again in the NBA, and Karl Malone and John, well, mostly Karl Malone, didn't want to play against him because we were so ignorant. We thought, you know, you could get AIDS by rubbing up against him and his sweat on your sweat. And we have come so far since those days, which is amazing to even think about. But I do believe that it was so taboo. It was so, you know, and everyone wants to know how he got it. And so there was all these questions about whether he was bisexual or a drug user and all these things, questions that were raised. And he insisted, no, it was through heterosexual sex. And of course, nobody believed him. And we just kept digging and digging and digging and never really got any answers to that question. But we did get an idea of what it was like to live with that, and from his friends, not from him. But I agree with you. I think it would have been irresponsible for us to just let it go away, because it was such a huge story. And then of course, now we're a lot more educated, and I don't know that it would be as big today as it was back then.
Yeah. Look, I was drafted by the Raiders, and I was down at the day when, you know, there was Marcus Allen and Plunkett and Cliff mm-hmm. Branch, and Lester Hayes and Matt Millen and Howie and all those guys were on the team. And I just got a small glimpse. I was never a great player, but you know, just the access and the people that come around, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I'm sure. And I bet you have some good stories. I'm working on a story about the Raiders right now, so maybe we should talk later. But yeah, it was a different era. I did the cover story at Sports Illustrated on Lyle Alzado when he announced that he had done steroids and human growth hormone, which is how he believes he contracted. What was it that he said he can? I forget what he said.
He had a brain tumor that was caused by the steroids. And on his first retirement was my first year. That was his last year. And not to be like weird about this, but you know, the way the lockers and the showers were set up, it's mm-hmm. just like one big, you know, there's like 16 on one side and 16 on the other. And so mm-hmm. everybody kind of walks in, and you know, that's just the way guys do it. And, you know, his butt looked like a pincushion. And not that I was
sick. I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was just full of needle holes, you know.
I did that first story too when he was making his comeback, and I was warned off it, saying you shouldn't do this. We think he's on steroids, and I said there's no reason to not do this story until we have positive proof. And so we did this story about how he was coming back and he was with Dr. Squat on the beach. I don't know if you remember Dr. Squat. I just feel like, well, how could he name himself that? But and then Lyle and I spent a lot of good time together, obviously in the months before he died, and it was a first person story, but it was I was told to. And then there was a gala that was set up they were going to have for him. And then his agent went nuts, and I mean, it was a crazy, crazy time, a crazy period in our history. And social media was not in existence yet, so there wasn't a lot of rumors to chase. It was all, going out and being an old-fashioned reporter, going out and digging up information. And now it's just everything's on social media, it seems.
Well, look, I never did, and this is not like a denial. This is just fact. But I was born, 6'2", 200, and I didn't grow faster or strong. I mean, it was all hard work, but I was tempted, uh-huh. Back in those days, because with Al Davis, everything was about speed. And as a receiver, I was fast, but I mean, he was looking for like super speed fast. And when people were coming up to me saying, hey, Mark, if you take this pill, it could add a tenth to your time. And that means longevity to your career and money.
Right. No,
it is definitely something. And it wasn't illegal. It was just something that was looked down on, but it wasn't illegal at that time.
Right, right. No, and I remember learning about steroids when I was in college at Nebraska, because we had a lot of guys who were pressured to, take something, because mainly it helps recovery, so you can go out and work out really hard, and then you take something and it helps your recovery, and that can make you faster. But it was interesting to go through that era and now see how I think the athletes are still ahead of the doctors. What do you think, Mark? Do you think the doctors are ahead of the athletes? I think it changes in cycles.
I think guys are always looking for an edge, and I'm not saying that edge is illegal, but the edge is the edge, and that's what propels careers and longevity. And like I said, when you do go off that cliff, it's a very difficult thing to transition. Some guys do it better than others, but it's still, I mean, everybody it happens to.
Yeah. And now what is it now? Cryotherapy and, blood transfusions and all. There's always something. It just seems like the doctors aren't quick enough, or they catch up and then the athletes find something else. There's stuff that's going on now that we won't know about for another 10 years.
Probably. I mean, they're always cooking something up. So let me ask you about Just Give Me the Damn Ball, which you wrote a book with Keyshawn Johnson.
With Keyshawn.
Listen, I'm a fellow wide receiver. I went to Washington. I played under John Jones. We had tremendous success, in particular against
you. Oh, yeah.
But that guy was a little bit of the, neon Deion Sanders, right? Prime time.
Yeah.
And he's certainly a guy that was definitely owned the stage, loved the ball, very cocky. And, he's an outspoken guy, that. But how did you end up partnering with Keyshawn?
Well, I was doing a story for Sports Illustrated on his high school, Dorsey High School, which is in the inner city LA. And a lot of violence and a lot of gang violence. And it was, there were gang members on the team.
This podcast is brought to you by Laird Superfoods. Let me tell you, these creamers are so amazing. They're super tasty, super delicious. And what they are is whole natural food ingredients mixed into these creamers. And I'm telling you, when you put this stuff into your drink, this powder substance, it is amazing. And their whole tagline is all about fueling your journey. You cannot go and actually power your way up a mountain, be in the pool, ride a big wave, unless you're properly fueled. And these guys are doing it all the right way. So where can you find this? At LairdSuperfood.com. And here's the kicker. If you use the code name MarkP20, that's MarkP20, you're going to get 20% off on your first order. So check it out, LairdSuperfood.com.
Well, I was doing a story for Sports Illustrated on his high school, Dorsey High School, which is in the inner city LA, and a lot of violence and a lot of gang violence. And it was, there were gang members on the team. And I was there almost every day throughout the summer and into the fall. And he wasn't playing. He was trying to scam his way into a D1 school, and it didn't work. He thought he could just get in and they would take him, but he couldn't get the grades, the scores. And so he and his buddy ended up going to a junior college in South Carolina, and we're going to go to Clemson. And then he came back. And anyway, we just started hanging out. And my daughter at the time, she's now 32, but she was 5 or 6 or 7. And I needed a babysitter and they needed work. And so I said, all you guys can babysit if you want. So they ended up babysitting my daughter when she was in first grade. And
hilarious.
And they taught her how to sneak into movies and, you know, how to do all these things. And I ended up writing about it in Sports Illustrated. It was a back of the magazine piece about my babysitter, the Heisman Trophy winner or candidate. And it was, you know, you always think they'd be a prom candidate, but never a Heisman candidate. But we just became friends. And I, honest to God, he is one of the most loyal people I have ever met. He is a loyal friend. His family is like my family. He came out, my mom died in August. He flew out for the service. I went to his mom's service, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. We're just really close. It's hard to explain, just really close family friends. He's never, you know, everyone thinks he's been in trouble. He's never been in trouble except for when he was in a juvenile and he got sent to detention camp for scalping tickets. He did other stuff. He just didn't get caught. But he, you know, once he went to college, he straightened himself out and became a really solid, funny. I think we're going to do another book. We're talking about it now. So we shall see. But we are good friends. His nephew is Michael Thomas, who's with the Saints now.
Yep.
And so we go back and forth and text and laugh. And, you know, Michael pulls out the phone after the touchdown a couple of weeks ago, and he was calling Keyshawn, and Keyshawn texts a picture of him answering the phone. So it's just been a really fun, great, fun family relationship. And I don't know how to explain it any more than that, but that's how it all began.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I know.
Yeah. You know, I worked in the mentorship program with UCLA. My best friend's Jim Mora. Unfortunately, he was let go of the but you probably know Jim.
I love him. I think he's one of the most honest people, probably to his detriment that he's so honest, but he really is.
He's awesome. Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why some of the things you just said, why, you know, we're tight.
Mm-hmm.
Love the guy to death. But a couple of years ago, we went to Dorsey, and I've never been to a high school game in my life. You know, he was recruiting. I went along with him. And we actually had to walk through a metal detector. And just going back to your point about gang members would show up. And it was just a new, unique experience for me that I hadn't gone through. But, you know, for those guys like Keyshawn that grow up in that kind of environment, you know, it's tough. It's tough.
Yeah. Now they have, you know, 10-foot fences between the field and the stands because fans were, and I went to a game at Compton High School or one of, I don't remember the name of it, but a couple of years ago, and they had these fences because the security was so bad. But there were gang members on the team. One kid had to switch his jersey so he wouldn't get jumped on it because Dorsey to the field is like a half a mile walk. And so he wouldn't get jumped by the rival gang going. I mean, it was crazy, crazy times out here in LA as far as the gangs. And, you know, the gangs are still around, but doesn't seem to be as crazy or as violent as it used to be. But it was pretty, there were nights I drove home from campus just afraid, you know, had to get out of there. It was dark.
Yeah. I mean, I've been there. So I'm a guy.
You know,
yeah. I want to jump in back to something you had mentioned earlier before. You know, again, the name of this podcast is called Finding Your Summit, People Overcoming Adversity and
Finding
Their Way. And then 2014, you're given the news that nobody wants to hear. You've got breast cancer.
Right.
So, you know, like when that hits you, the impact of those words, you know, how did you deal with that? I mean, how do you internalize something like that?
Well, by what you've done, you know, scaling all those mountains, which I think you're nuts for doing, but you're welcome. I can barely make it up the stairs these days. But no, you know, my doctors, this is the peril of being a sort of known sports person, because everything becomes about football, baseball, basketball. So he calls me to tell me we found something suspicious in your mammogram. And I'm like, well, what? And he goes, well, wait, what pick did the Lakers get? I said, are you kidding me? I said, it was the day of the lottery draft pick. And I said, I'm a little distracted right now. And so, you know, and finally he goes, well, we think we found some small cancer. And it hit me like, you know, a ton of bricks, as they say. And I was really scared. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what to do. I had a friend at my gym who had just gone through big, scarier even, breast cancer. And so I called her, and I just very, and I didn't want, the hardest part was telling my parents, because I didn't want them to worry. I didn't want them to. I told my daughter, and she came at home, and we talked, and we sort of figured out what I was going to do. And then once I figured it out, once I got my doctors in line and my hospital, and knew I was going to have surgery, then I was going to do chemo. Once I got all my ducks in a row, so to speak, I was fine, because I had a plan. And I just put one foot in front of the other and just did what the doctors say. I trusted them implicitly. And what I went through was not even close to what a lot of people have to go through. And I realize that now, even though I got really sick and my lymph nodes got infected, and I watched all 7 seasons of The West Wing because I was so bored and sick. But, you know, and now that I think about it, having a plan was the best thing I could do. And that's, I tell people all the time, you know, I was giving a speech at a school, and a young woman said, "What do you do when things get really hard?" And I said, "Well, this is when I realized it." I said, "Well, what I did was I found a plan." And she found a plan. She was in an abusive foster home situation, and she found a plan, and she got herself out of that situation, and she's in nursing school, or she was in nursing school. So it works. And I think that's part of my makeup, is being organized and being knowledgeable and figuring out what I'm going to do. When I saw Holly Rowe last night, and she's cancer free now too. So that's great news. She had melanoma, which was really scary, and had it way worse than I did, but as most people have. And so I realized how fortunate I was to have my friend who had been through this and had all her, I even had her wig person. I said, "Well, what kind of, who did your wig?" And I never wore my wig. I wore it, I think, to the grocery store once. And then I decided to go bald on TV, and my first assignment back was Marcus Mariota being drafted in Hawaii. So that was a pretty cool experience, to be on the beach with the wind blowing tremendously and not have to worry about my hair. And I thought that was awesome. So from then on, it's just been positive every step of the way. I had a stroke in the Warriors locker room. I collapsed in the Warriors locker room. That was from the chemo and the cancer, because I had blood clots. And I've been through 2 major surgeries in the last 6 months, to have a knee replacement and a hip replacement. But, you know, you just put one foot in front of the other. Now it's literally trying to walk without limping. But, you know, life gives you adversity at every step of the way. And I had a really good year, and then I had a really bad year. So losing my mom in August was tough. But you just get through it, and you don't really have a choice. You just get through it however you can, and try to maintain the positivity that I think I was born with. I wake up every day positive. I don't think I've ever been depressed. I don't think I've ever, I'm sure I've been in a bad mood. I just try to approach things with positivity.
Yeah. I think one of the things that you said, you're right on target with, and this really the way I plan my life, and certainly the mm-hmm. different journeys I've been on, my multiple summits, but, you know, fail to plan, plan to
yeah,
fail.
Yeah, how many have you done? Five of the 7, or what is it?
Yeah, I've done 5 of the 7. I'm headed down to Antarctica, a mountain called
Wow.
Vincent Massif in January will be number 6, and then number 7.
Why do you do this? Why do you do this? What makes you want to climb these? I'm sorry to turn the tables on you, but what makes you want to climb these mountains?
You know, I mean, I think the biggest thing is I was going through some pretty tough adversity myself about 7 years ago, right? And I was going through a divorce. And my dad died of a stroke 3 months ago. And, you know, I was close with him. And I just had to figure out something. And I was in this place where I was treading water. And I was there for a couple of years, very lonely place. And so one day I just woke up and I said, you know, decided to change that mindset from, how did I get here to what am I going to do about it? And at that point in time, I just put something out there where I wanted to do something great and something athletic. And I couldn't still go back and play in the NFL. And so I did some research and found that no NFL player had ever climbed the 7 summits. And so I said, I want to be there. So off
didn't
I went.
You have just gone to a, didn't you have just gone to a spa? You know, and sat in a sauna and sweated a little bit.
Well, the answer is yes, but that's what you do after you get off the mountain, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
So what I want to do with you, Shelley, is in 2020.
I'm not climbing any mountains. Don't try to get me to go to Antarctica with you. It's not happening.
No. But what's going to happen is you and I are going to Mount Everest, surprisingly, is very wired just with, you know, the popularity in one sense.
Right.
that's become. And I want to be able to, you know, get caught up with you on Everest Base Camp and maybe Camp 2 or Camp 3. And we can Skype or do something where, you know, I can wave to you and invite you up or show you what it's like. But it will be fun. And it's been an amazing.
That would be fun.
Yeah. No, it's been incredible. It's been really incredible.
I'm really impressed that you're doing this. And it makes perfect sense to me. Because that's what I'm trying to do now. I go to physical therapy every morning and just trying to get so I can walk without limping. And that's my goal right now. So I understand completely.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things you just talked about is about having a plan and going forward and having the power of positivity to really fuel you in terms of like these things hit you. And you're right. Everybody experiences adversity. And it's how you deal with it. And, you know, I just don't see this as being like I'm going to, you know, seven summits and that's it. I want to go beyond that. I want to ski to the North and South Pole, which is called the Explorer's Grand Slam. I want to climb the highest peak in every state. And, you know, it's just there's just too many guys who I know and they're good dudes, but they spend too much time signing autographs or talking about what happened 30 years ago. And it's just to me, it's boring and it's not interesting. And there's so many other things that I could be doing. And then I've also, and this is another name that you know, but Chris Long invited me 2 years ago and Jim Moore too, to join his Waterboy team to climb Kilimanjaro again. I've done that now twice, but more importantly, raise money for the people of the Maasai tribe down the Serengeti. And so we actually raised $47,000 and funded our
own. Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, some really amazing things that come out of this journey.
And Chris Long is one of my, I don't know him at all, but he has been such a great example of what you can do if you put your mind to it. So I'm really, count me in if you're doing anything that doesn't involve climbing.
No, I mean, I think there is some things that we can bring more awareness around that story and what we're doing. And Waterboys now is putting me in and under their umbrella in terms of when I'm
out
and doing other things where proceeds will go towards that that organization. But I got to tell you just a quick, which is something that I think you'll appreciate in this story about Waterboys. When we finally made it to the top of that mountain, and it was chaos because we had some Green Berets that, you know, were blind and had no legs, and you know, so we finally got everybody up there. And I was sitting at the summit, right below. There's a sign that says you've made it. And I put my arm around Chris and said, I think I'm the only guy to say that I've played with your dad, Howie, and actually somebody with you, Chris. It was a great moment.
Right. Well, wasn't it Chris who was in the town that got shot up and he donated his check?
I forget
the name, but I was so impressed by that. A lot of these young people don't understand what they can do. And sometimes we just throw money at people and we say, okay, you had a dysfunctional upbringing, but now go act functional, and they don't know what to do. But Chris is a great example of what you can do.
He really is, and he really gets it, and he really understands there's a bigger picture. You know, I'm blessed to have been around him, to get to know him. And, you know, the other part of that, too, is, you know, to be one of his kids, and how he actually has three boys, you know, two of them play in the NFL, but you know, that's a lot of pressure to follow that. And Chris has done it in a very grateful and humble way. So it's, you know, it's just great to see all that.
That's cool. Yeah. It's nice to have that connection.
Yeah. So for you going forward, ESPN, other things like that, what do you focus on as you go? Like tomorrow, the next day, you know, this next year, do they put you on like you are on the NBA duty or specific team or what? How's that?
I'm sort of like the utility person, you know, whatever it is that comes up. I love breaking news. I love the chase. So, you know, when LeBron was deciding where he was going to go the first time, you know, I was in Cleveland, you know, running around trying to figure all that out, finding out where he was going to go. I knew pretty early on that he was going to Miami, but I couldn't report it because I couldn't burn my source. But I love the chase. I love the breaking news. I love doing, again, stories with information that nobody else can get. And I teach now at USC, I teach journalism classes, and I teach my students what they teach us at ESPN, which is there's a reason why you are at this game. So give us something that only you would know because you were at this game. So that's what I go into every situation trying to think of, what can I give the viewer that they wouldn't know unless I was here? And I relish that. And so Right now, I'm just trying to walk without limping, but I will get there. I'm doing sidelines on the 26th for the Cheez-It Bowl, because I always get the strangest bowl game. But I love every assignment. I love every day to go to work, because it's every day is different for me. Like, even doing this podcast is different for me, you know. And it's, I love talking about the business and what I think, where I think it's going, and what people need to do to get better. And I love seeing my students get better, and I love their reaction when they get better. And so I think that's probably what I'm going to continue doing. I'm doing more long form stories for E60 and Outside the Lines, and not as many of the 20-hour NFL days as I used to. And college, the colleges aren't so good out here right now in LA, so that was kind of a lame year. But you know, it goes in cycles, and I'll go wherever the hot story is, wherever the chase is, because that's what I really love doing most.
Well, look, what I love is that you're giving back to USC. You're teaching kids on things that you've learned in the past and trying to guide them, you know, as they go out into the future. By the way, my daughter Claudette just graduated last year from USC. School of Annenberg, which was really cool.
So is she in the journalism business?
Well, she is. She's in production right now. She's trying to find her way, but she's working for a number of different, this is more like the Nike and Adidas and L'Oreal type of thing, and working her way through that.
Tell her to call me. I'd be glad. I love working with students. So if she needs any help or contacts or anything, let me know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for that. And so look, from the kid who went to college in Nebraska, he made your way through onward to ESPN, he's overcome some different things, this cancer stuff and the stroke, and you know, you're kicking and screaming and you're alive and you've written books and you're so accomplished. Now you're giving back. I'm super grateful that you came on this podcast and shared your story with everybody.
That's Frank Cooney. Frank Cooney is the one who hooked us up. And he was I used to be his, I don't know what he does now. He does something.
He and I are working together.
At some blog. But anyway, he's one of my favorite people. And I used to be his backup writer. And he used to just yell at me and scream at me and say, that's not right. And it was great education. And he's a great guy. He's got like 17,000 grandkids now. But it was really fun to see him at the Raiders game. I know. He goes, yeah, I'm a little ahead of you. And I said, yeah. But those were good years back at the San Francisco Examiner when I worked with him.
Yeah. Well,
so thanks to him.
Yeah. Well, he's screaming and yelling at me now. So I get to take your role a little bit.
Okay. All right. Good. Good.
All good. All right. Well, look, we know that we can find you on Facebook and certainly ESPN.
And Twitter.
All those things. So we'll put all those things in the show notes. But again, it's been such a joy and super grateful that you came on.
Thank you.
Still giving. Okay.
Thank you for wanting to do this with me and asking really great questions. Those are really things I haven't thought about in a long time. So
thank you.
That was fun.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
I enjoyed it. You did a good job. And good luck climbing those horrible mountains.
You and I are going to reconnect on this on Everest, okay?
Okay. All right.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.